Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Kingdom podcast, the very first one of 2024. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a little bit. We missed you all. And what is that? It seems like I have a guest with me today. A guest. Shall you reveal yourself to our lovely audience?
It's going to be much more disappointing. I'm Madeline May. I'm the... the guest.
You're a big deal, the guest. It was really hard to get you today.
Yeah, you promised me someone else would be on the show and then cut them out the last minute to trap me.
That's how I got Jazzy and Lizzy to say yes to the show.
That's fair. You know, it's a good strategy because, like, if I wanted someone on, I would just lie and say someone else that they admire is going to be on the show too.
Neil Gaiman would regularly be on the show. Then Neil Gaiman would regularly be on the show.
Yeah, no, you told me that Norm Macdonald's soul was going to come back just for this show, and I'm like, well, I've always wanted to meet Norm Macdonald, and it's hard now because he's dead, but you know, I figure I could talk to him.
It's just he's very quiet.
Yeah, that does not sound like Norm Macdonald at all.
No, he is here, just very quiet. He's not talking.
That's fair.
I mean, when you die and see the other side, you don't your soul doesn't stay the same.
All right. Well, whatever. Bring me on next time. When you have the who was supposed to be on with us? Anthony, right?
Yes, Anthony was supposed to be back on this episode today.
I want to come back because he seems like an interesting guy, and I want to talk to him. I don't know what I'd say to him, but he seems like an interesting guy.
Hello would be a good place to start.
Thank you. You are so right, Dusty. That's great.
I am nothing if not, I am nothing if not a liar, so he will definitely be back, wink, wink.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how to take it. Are you lying to me, or are you just like, this is hard. I'm just being silly today. I'm not. Crystal, I'm not a smart person, and you're being, like, really offensive to that right now. You need to, like, be nicer to me for not of the being good at stuff, all right? I feel like you owe that to me.
In being genuine, I was making a lot of funny jokes because I like you. It's why I kept asking you back, because you're my friend and I care about you.
Thank you. I do appreciate it. Okay. That's fair. I allow that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Okay. That's fine. I allow that.
It's fine, right. You'll allow it, yeah.
That's cool, all right. Yeah, all right.
Sorry, if you hear any noise in the background, that's my cat deciding he wants to be an asshole.
Aw, that's what they do, I think, with the... sorry if I just completely out of it. I just got tired all of a sudden. Probably...
I know, speaking to me, I get it.
Fuck off. I mean that in the kind way, like, come on, all right? We all love you, Crystal. No, I just had electrolysis today, so I'm a little tired, but
You want to know something kind of crazy, though? I looked at our chat log when we did the last episode.
It's a year ago,
sure,
right?
It was a year. It was almost exactly a year. Uh-huh. That's crazy. Time flies. I apologize for not asking you back sooner.
Honestly, I've been super busy with my own stuff. I'm doing video essays. I feel like that was maybe the last time I was on. My YouTube channel. We just got two more. I think last time all I had was the Hell of a Boss video. Now I got a video on Beau's Afraid, and I got a short video on Paranoia Agent. And this month I will be releasing a new long video. And by this is looking to be my longest one. It's gonna be over an hour. But I'm really excited about it. I think people are gonna really dig this new one I got coming out.
Well, that's exciting. What is that video about? Unless you want to keep it a secret.
No, I've talked about it now. Basically, it's called the worst line in the history of cinema, and it's all about a line that I can't stop thinking about from the cinematic masterpiece that is Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. By noted author, Jukrolon, wrote it. And I'm obsessed with this one line. And the video is kind of about why I'm obsessed with this one really bad line in the movie. And going on to explain why it matters and why it kind of shows overall, you know, why I think that Fantastic Beasts is not only a mediocre movie by a written by a horrible person, but also is genuinely bad in a way that I find like fascinating and I think thematically appropriate to what the movie is perhaps accidentally saying about itself and the world in which it was made.
That's really interesting. Sometimes you can like take a line in a movie and like basically be the determination of why said thing is bad.
Well, for me, it's like the whole thing like is the whole thing is terrible. But for me, it's like this particular line, which is a short line. It's a very short line, and but for me, it's so indicative. Is that the right word?
Indicative,
yeah. It's so indicative of why the film just doesn't work. And it's one of these things where, like, I told people my obsession with this line, and most people don't understand what I'm talking about. Because they're like, I don't get it. Why is that line so bad? So, like, I'm kind of doing this in a way to explain why I find this one line bad, where basically I just kind of use it as a jumping-off point. At least in the first half of the video, to talk about why, like, nothing in Fantastic Beasts makes sense. And then in the second half, I talk about why it matters that nothing in the film makes sense. And I'm not just doing, like, a CinemaSins-style video or whatever. But the line in question is, I don't know if you've ever seen Fantastic Beasts.
I saw it in theaters
once. Yeah, I saw it in theaters. I saw it, like, actually, like, an early screening because I think my sister had gotten something, and we were able to see it early. And I remember, like, even then, like, thinking, there's something wrong about this movie. This movie's not working. You know, that's before all the really bad stuff came out about Rowling, so I was just like,
yeah,
the movie is just, there's something going on. And then I watched it a few more times, and then I was like, okay, now I get why this movie is really bad. I mean, it got good reviews when it came out. I think it's certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
It got mediocre. It got, like, decent reviews. You know, it wasn't like...
No, yeah, but if you go to, like, if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, it's got like a 78% or something like that. It's not, you know, it's enough to for the website to certify it as fresh. You know, most people I ask that, like, kind of remember the movies. I remember it was, like, all right. Like, it was kind of whatever. Kind of forgot about it. And I am trying to get people to re-remember the movie and be like, no, this is actually one of the worst things I've ever seen. I'm going to explain to you why it's one of the worst things, only beaten by Fantastic Beasts 2 and 3 for worst movies I've ever seen, because the sequels are even worse. The third one is unwatchable. in my opinion.
I have not. I did not see any of the sequels, so.
good, very good. The second one is bad in a confusing way, like the first one is. And the third one, I was painful. I felt bad after watching it. Like, why did I do that to myself? I know she's a TERF now. Now, I shouldn't have to force myself to do this. I saw it with a friend of mine, and he also agreed it was like the worst thing you'd ever seen. I guess not to beat around the bush, but the line in question, is in Fantastic Beasts, I don't know if you remember, there's a part, where they go into like a speakeasy.
You
remember this, right? So yeah. they go into the speakeasy to, they're trying to meet a guy to find out some information. And it's all 20s themed. And, Newt Scamander, the main guy, the Eddie Redmayne character.
Yes.
Is sitting down with, Tina Goldstein, the love interest, / magic cop lady in the movie. And they sit down at a table, and she's looking around. There's all these, you know, kind of low life thugs. There's like wanted posters all over. And she says to Newt, "I've arrested half of the people in here." And that line completely destroyed my brain. Why did it completely destroy my brain? Well, you'll have to watch the video to find out. But I've been obsessed with this line ever since I heard it, because to me, it's the most insane thing I've ever heard. And, you know, like, as we're talking, it sounds like, oh, you know, like, it just sounds like a weird line at worst. Like, what are you talking about? But I explain in excruciating detail why this one very short line is kind of my current obsession, and why I think it's just the most, just the worst thing anyone has ever said. That's what the video is about.
It is exciting, and that is a good tease for people to watch it, to have your full, unaltered.
For anyone listening, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone listening to the podcast, I want you to really think about the line, "I've arrested half of the people in here." Just kind of meditate on it. You know, stew in it. Like, think on it. And then come and watch my video. Because it's one of those things where the more you think about it, the more insane it is. It's a human being said this line. I'm very excited.
I am excited to see it. I need to, I'll definitely be keeping an eye on your channel when that pops up. Cause
yeah.
That sounds really fascinating and a great approach to a video essay, really.
I've always kind of wanted to write like an essay. Like, I've always wanted to see like how much I could write about like as little as possible. Or, like, to take something, like, really simple and short, like a piece of art or something, to see, like, how much, like, I can kind of write about it. You know, like, I was doing a project where I was writing about, like, an episode of the Rugrats cartoon, and those are, like, 10 minutes, and I wanted to see, like, how much I could type from just this one 10-minute cartoon. That one's not happening. It's not been released. It kind of got sidetracked. It may appear later. But to me, that's what's kind of interesting to me. That's why I wanted to like have this one line, kind of be the start and kind of spread out to these other things. I don't even talk about the Fantastic Beasts until like I think 10 pages into my video essay, and like that's the kind of video that I'm trying to make.
Wow.
I can give a sneak peek, at least explain some of the reasons why I think the line, "I've arrested half of the people in here," is insane.
If you want to. Unless you want to save it for the video.
Well, I'll do the very basic stuff, because to really get into the nitty-gritty will take a while, but for me, just like the immediate things that come out to me is that, one, it's just a stupid thing for somebody to say. It's like the kind of boast that a child would make, you know, like, oh no, like I once ate like 80 Oreo cookies in a row. It's like, you didn't do that. Just bragging to other kids on the playground. It's like, I arrested half of the people in here in the bar, in this crowded bar. It has like 50 people. You're saying that you arrested 25 of these people in this bar, which is like, what does that mean, that you arrested half of the people in a bar? Like, did you send them to jail? Like, what did you arrest them for? If you arrested them for serious crimes, then why are they out right now in the bar? Why, Tina, are you not disguised at all while you go into the bar, if half of the bar are people you've arrested? Did you arrest them for like parking tickets and it's like not a big deal? Like, what does that mean that you arrested half of the people in the bar? Like what is happening? Like, what is going on? That's kind of my question. And the video kind of goes out from there to try and explain and figure out like what she could possibly mean when she says she arrested half of the people in a crowded bar in Magic Land. Like, what does that mean?
Well, I have thoughts.
What are your thoughts? I want to hear your thoughts. What do you think that could mean?
Thoughts as in, I don't know what you have in your mind, but what springs to mind of someone saying they walk into a place filled with people who would just say maybe different from said person, and mm-hmm. like almost bragging about saying that they've arrested half of the people in the place. That's a very yikesy thing to say, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I go through the whole gamut of like why, you know, she said it. Like,
it would be like if a police officer in a movie and a protagonist in a movie, you know, was a cop, right? And they walked into a bar that's predominantly non-white, and then saying how they arrested half of the people in said location.
If somebody said that to me, I would ask them to leave. Like, get the fuck out of here. We're not hanging out anymore. You're not my friends anymore. What a stupid thing to say. Also, you're a cop. I don't hang out with cops. Now that I know that, get out of here. But that is what Tina is in the movie. I worked really hard to try and figure out what Tina is, because from what I understand, she is, in the context of the movie, an ex-auror. And aurors, from what I can understand, are like wizard FBI. I can't narrow it down any more than that. They seem to be wizard cops. I believe it's the thing that Harry Potter becomes at the end of the books, and in that play that nobody saw. It's Wizard FBI. It's like Wizard Men in Black, because it seems like their job is to make sure that like people, like regular human people, are like not finding out about magic by like any means necessary, which just for me leads to all these other questions. Like, did you arrest all of these people for like, you know, accidentally revealing magic, or like, you know, doing something and a human, a muggle, which I hate that word so much, is doing, like, what do you arrest a troll for? Like, just being in public, there's a troll, so you just arrest the troll. Like, it really, to me, kind of, like, get to this level of, like, how absurd the world of Harry Potter is, and, like, why it really doesn't work as far as, like, world building is concerned. Because, like, the more it, and this is, like, the ultimate point. I mean, I don't care. I'll just talk about it. This helps me. this helps me kind of visualize everything. So I'm still kind of working it out. I'm almost done with the written part. But, like, I think it's interesting, that the more broad the Harry Potter mythos gets, the more obvious it is that the world that J.K. Rowling built was not meant to encompass anything outside of, like, one private magic boarding school. And I kind of find that fascinating. That's kind of like the awfulness, quote unquote, I guess, of Fantastic Beasts that I find really, really fascinating. And I, like, again, kind of like use this throwaway line as a, to kind of show that, like, how little thought is put into, like, all of these things that really should have at least, like, a tiny bit of thought put into them. But, like, everything's kind of a throwaway line that doesn't make any sense. And you just kind of keep stacking them up until you get this whole picture of, like, well, this world just doesn't work. This world just makes no sense. Like, when you kind of put everything down, this world is actually impossible by its own rules. Like, by its own laws of whatever, like, this world should just not work. And that's when I get into what I think is the theme of the film and kind of what it's ultimately saying, again, accidentally or not. And it's almost like an accidental satire of itself. I think I compare it to, like, Starship Troopers in a way, where it's like, except Starship Troopers was intentionally made as, like, a satire of fascism. I feel
the original novel is not that, but the adaptation for the
exactly,
film is,
yeah, yeah. The book is fascist, but, you know, Paul Verhoeven, you know, is a master satirist, and he made this incredible. I mean, I love Starship Troopers, the movie. I think is great. And, you know, he satirizes the book, and it shows.
I mean,
how,
it's
like,
similar in tone to RoboCop, really. I mean,
yeah,
like, yeah,
I mean, another
Verhoeven's
great
work is just yeah,
yeah. He's amazing, and I think Fantastic Beasts in a way is kind of like an accidental kind of satire of the Harry Potter world that was made just kind of through just pure incompetence and arrogance on the part of J.K. Rowling, who was the primary writer of this movie. Like, it really has, like, the air of, like, one of those, like inbred royalty, just like making decrees that don't make any sense. Like, you really get this sense of, like, Rowling just really coming out as, like, this queen who has no idea what she's talking about, just, like, says things, and they just become true only because she is just the queen of whatever nation she's in, and being like, why is that happening? Why are we allowing this to happen? Because she has no idea what she's talking about. Like, within her own world and what she's saying, it's like nothing makes sense. And that's why I kind of say it as a satire, because in order for the things in the film to happen in a way that is, like, positive, like, basically you have to just imagine that there is a god character in the film just, like, manipulating things. And that's when I get to the really weird stuff in my video essay, where I talk about that there are so many coincidences and things that just kind of have to happen, whether off screen or on screen, in order for anything to actually work out in anyone's favor, that you just have to assume that there is just an invisible character named God in the movie, just brute forcing everything to happen. So there's no way any of these things happen naturally. And that's when it gets into, like, the really weird stuff. But it's interesting. And as you can see, I've lost my mind entirely thinking about it. That's going to be the video essay.
I honestly can't wait. I want to hear more of your thoughts. I hope talking about it is actually giving you... I notice if I talk about certain things, it gives me better springboard concepts to play off of in whatever writing or whatever I'm working on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I always talk to, you know, my friends, collaborators I have on different projects, just to have like a springboard because I, you know, when I say stuff out loud or write it, that's kind of when I realize like, oh, that actually didn't make sense now that I'm saying it, or rather does make sense now that I've said it. And then they'll kind of be like, you know, they'll have their own take on it. And I just kind of like that back and forth. But I guess for me, I was just noticing that like nobody was really like talking about Fantastic Beasts in the way that I was thinking about it, which was that it was this gigantic mess of a movie. Like there were other things people are talking about with Fantastic Beasts, and I remember when it came out, it was received fairly positively because again, this was before we knew J.K. Rowling was a monster. But I feel like the film has soured with her reputation, but I'm arguing that even without her reputation, this movie is a piece of shit. And this is the ultimate reason why, you know, and, I don't know or think it predicts anything about Rowling's future behavior. It's not something I argue in this video essay. But it is at least, it does at least showcase what I think is Rowling's just extremely, arrogant. I don't like saying pretentious, but it's like, I don't know what other words to use. Writing style that seems to just be entirely based around, well, if I wrote it, then it must be amazing. So there's no reason to ask any more questions about it. Yeah.
Yeah, people have pointed out, and it makes sense. I mean, like, I'm a white British woman who gets a lot of money and it goes to her head. It's like, it's not surprising. And what I found fascinating is that one of the reasons probably why it was pretty well received when it first was released comparatively was there was still a lot of goodwill from the Harry Potter franchise.
Yeah.
Going into it.
Yeah.
Like it people weren't as ready to parse through it in a more critical lens, which is partially why the sequels you see, well, when they both got released, the reviews for them are pretty bad. And I don't know if that's connected with people losing the goodwill that they had with her, or if just they're just generally worse films.
They are worse. I will
it's
say
probably
they are
a bit
worse.
Of both, right?
Yeah.
So, but I do think there was still that goodwill that was with the franchise by that point when that first film came out. And I think having this critical lens on it, looking back is interesting. I mean, finding it fascinating that people have been looking back at the Harry Potter novels and with a much critical, eye. I mean, stuff that, full disclosure, I never read any of the books. I was not a book person with that. I saw all the films.
I'm same. I wasn't a book. I did read the first two books. I couldn't get through the third because it was too long. And I was a child.
yeah, you
kind of had to force me to read as a kid because I would much rather just play video games. So it was amazing that I read even two of them. I do remember liking them as a kid, and I liked the movies, you know, when they came out. But yeah, to your point, I agree. I think this kind of, reevaluation of Rowling's work and how Harry Potter does have like a lot of problems and flaws. I think is fascinating. Like, Like Sean's got a great
for own like yeah, Sean's got a great video.
Video back,
the books are just filled with like her bigotries and her politics, and it's like weird.
It really is, and I think like that stuff I feel like kind of reached its zenith almost in the Fantastic Beasts movies, especially in the first one, because the second and third are incoherent. If they have a political message, I mean, it's in that in the garbage can. Like, find it through all of the disgusting mush that is those movies to find, like, what was originally thrown away. But, like, it is interesting because what I think is fascinating about J.K. Rowling's mythos and the world that she has created is that she wants to have, like, this fun, magical world that, like, kids can understand and kids can enjoy. But she also wants it to be like an actual, an actual system of like an actual world that works beyond like what its original intention was. Like I find it really fascinating that she kind of puts all of her politics, like, within this Wizarding World, like, society that she's made. And, like, a lot of them don't work for the same reasons that, like, her politics don't work. Like, she puts in, like, neoliberalism and this kind of hyper-capitalism into a world where those things don't make sense to exists within the world she's made, and like having them be in that world just shows how wrong and kind of how bad all of the politics that Rowling has is.
Absolutely.
You know, I was talking with Chris Nevergall, my roommate and sometimes collaborative partner. Because he knows more about Harry Potter stuff than I do, and we are talking about like there's a reason why like when you ask like Harry Potter fans like what the Harry Potter dream is, it's to go to Hogwarts, you know, like it's not to just be a wizard in Wizarding World. Like every fantasy is I want to be at that school. Even the game that just came out is set entirely basically in Hogwarts. You're playing a Hogwarts student. That's what people want, and that's the dream. And that's because I don't think the world that Rowling created makes any kind of sense outside of like this children's story about a magic boarding school. Because I guess think of it this
that's
way.
That's the shit that people care about.
Exactly.
Really?
And think of it this way. Like, if you have a children's book, like, you can forgive a lot of things. Like, if you have a children's book that's, you know, basically only in one location for its entire thing, like a city maybe, the Hogsmeade or whatever, and then Hogwarts. Like, if your entire story is confined into there, you can just kind of write whatever you want because there is no other outside thing to kind of think about. And when you write a story like that where it's a children's story, and you have the other big part, which is the hero's journey narrative of the chosen one, that is Harry Potter, like you can just have things that within a wider context don't make sense, but within the small confines of a chosen one meant to destroy evil in like a castle school, it's totally fine because you're not supposed to think beyond that because it's not important. It's not the purpose of the books. Like for instance, Quidditch as a sport, makes no sense that there is a position that if they get a thing, the team just wins. Like, on a broader scale, that doesn't make any sense. But it's perfect for a story where you want your hero to be the most chosen special boy, to give him some kind of position that makes him even specialer and more important. The position of seeker exists in order to make the character of Harry Potter more of a power fantasy for people to read into. Because that's the point of these books, is you want to be Harry Potter and to have all of the nice exclusive things.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Harry Potter gets all of this inheritance money, and he's, like, rich when he goes to Diagon Alley or whatever. Which, when you think about that, people who know magic and just manifest things out of thin air can just basically create wealth with magic. Mm. Why does the existence of rich and poor people even exist in the first place? Well, the reason it exists is because, one, J.K. Rowling can't think beyond neoliberalism, and two, it's part of that power fantasy journey where Harry Potter goes from being poor to being rich. That's the reason why this stuff exists, is to make Harry Potter, seem like a better, more interesting character within this frame. But if you take that stuff outside of Harry Potter, it no longer makes any sense, because its existence is to push one single character.
Yeah. It sounds like, and your point being, that the best experience you can have with this franchise, with Harry Potter, is through the singular story that was originally sort of developed. But once you, like, try and broaden that to, like, the entire universe created around it, rather than just a singular children's fantasy, it just totally destroys it, especially since J.K. is not particularly a great writer when it comes to that, outside of her own limited viewpoint of the world.
Exactly. And I think that's what, to me, is kind of fascinating about J.K. Rowling, is that she refuses to admit that what she wrote only works within a very particular context, because she does so much, like, retconning and fussing around of her world to be like, oh, actually, this series was always perfect the whole time, and I've always thought about how every possible thing can happen, instead of just being like, well, you know, I just wasn't thinking about that when I wrote it. Oh, well. Like, which would be a much more honest and, like, forgivable thing to just say. Like, who cares that, you know, right, you forgot to put it, like, who cares that you forgot to put a gay person into Harry Potter? You're a white woman in Britain and, like, writing books in the 90s. Like, just do better next time. Put a gay person in your next book and, you know, like, don't pretend like there was always secretly a gay person in Harry Potter when that was never your intention.
Right.
You know, just admit that you wrote a very narrow scoped story. And that's fine. Like, that's kind of what makes the Harry Potter book so appealing, is that they are so kind of focused like that. You really are just looking at one place. The broader Harry Potter gets, the more it crumbles, because, you know, like, thinking about, like, magic chocolate, or that people at a magic school could die, you know, because students seem to always be in danger. That's fine. It's like, it's a kid's book. Like, what could possibly, it's fine. Who cares? What could possibly happen? It's a book for kids. But, like, when you start, like, going beyond that, it's like, it's kind of like that Lorax movie they came out with, where they expanded on the universe. Like, what did that add to anything? How did the extra stuff they added to that Lorax movie, like, why? Like, what's the point of that? Does it actually weaken what's happening? Does it actually show the limit? Because, like, Dr. Seuss wrote a simple story with simple parameters because that's what the story needed. And that's what J.K. Rowling did. But you know, I, because she's just so full of herself and thinks that she's just like queen shit, that she can like do whatever she wants and it'll just be accepted as a masterpiece. And I say that because I don't know why else you would have made some of the decisions J.K. Rowling does, not only in Fantastic Beasts, but in a lot of her post-Harry Potter, like, lore info dumps. I even talk about the fucking shitting your pants thing in my video essay. Not just because it's hilarious that she wrote that wizards just pooped themselves and whisked it away to the cornfield. That is funny that she said that, it's canon, but it's also, like, that kind of writing, I think, is so, like, it shows, like, where she is as a writer, probably always, but definitely now, where she can just say something like that without a second thought, and it's, like, fine, you know, without asking herself what the implications of the fact that wizards just had diarrhea, waved their wand, and everything was fine, you know? And that's what the video essay is about. Like, what does that mean? Like, if you think about wizards have that much, like, if you think about, like, what kind of wizards they must be, where they just shit anywhere and then just whisk, like, you know, just magic it away with a wand, like, you have to paint a very negative perception of wizards and wizard culture, right?
Right.
Like, if we're thinking beyond just the fact that, oh, J.K. Rowling's an old woman that's losing her mind, she's a crazy turf or whatever, like, thinking about, like, this is an actual thing that's in the books and it's a part of her series, like, wizards have to be, like, the most pompous, like, inbred royalty-like people of all time. Where, right. Like, they can't even be bothered to, like, dig a hole. You know, just poop in it. You know? Or, like, anything like that. You have to start to imagine that wizards actually kind of suck. That wizards are actually kind of just rich assholes. You know? If they can do anything, then they're basically just, like, god kings. Like, why would you have any empathy or want to be like these people? And I give examples in the film of this in motion, which will make more sense with, like, the video examples that I show with the examples that I point out in the movie. But when you start to, like, kind of put all the mistakes and everything into context, you realize that there is, like, a narrative being told, again, probably unintentionally, but a narrative being told that, like, wizards are just so superior to other people that it doesn't even matter. That things just don't matter. That wizards are so just above and beyond everyone else in society that it's like, why are we even having a conversation about anything else? And I think that's fascinating because that's, like, a really shitty worldview. And I also think it's fascinating because since J.K. Rowling is such a bad writer, she mangles her point to where it becomes a satire of her, I would guess, intended message, and the film's intended message. So instead of creating a story that shows how cool wizards are, much like how Starship Troopers does, it becomes a satire of this kind of thinking. Like, Starship Troopers is a satire in that it basically comes across as, like, the fascist propaganda film that the fascists in charge of that world would make. And right. I think in a lot of ways, like, that's how Fantastic Beasts is. Fantastic Beasts is, like, the bad propaganda of whatever fascist or whatever wizarding world is. Because
if she was a good writer, she would make that the case, though, you know.
Well, then she would have to admit that her world sucks, which she would never do. Like, that's right. Kind of why it's all accidental, because she, you know, is so attached and, like, you know, hands-on, just refuses to give up any kind of control of her vision. We get all of her worst impulses, and because she could never admit that her wizarding world is full of just horrible people, we get these just accidental satires. And I think that's really fascinating. And I go into further detail, like, here's a great example. Through research that I did on this video, I ended up going onto a lot of Harry Potter fan wikis to try and, like, understand some of the deeper lore here that J.K. Rowling invented. Because one of my questions was, like, why do wizards have prohibition? Like, we know why people have prohibition because of, like, scare tactics made by religious conservatives, all of these other fear tactics by a Republican moral system. McCarthyism probably played some small role in it. But, like, why did wizards decide that they had to stop drinking alcohol? Did they not want to go against the Bible? Is there a magic Bible? And I looked into it, and it turns out that wizards actually did not have prohibition at the same time as the humans did. And the reason why they didn't, to me, is so funny. Like, the in-canon reason why wizards didn't have prohibition is, like, hysterical to me. According to this lore that I assume is made by J.K. Rowling, because she writes everything, apparently wizards, when humans did, I say wizards and humans as a comparison because I just hate saying muggles and nomage. Like, it sounds like I'm saying a slur. I guess it is a slur in the book.
I mean,
too.
Isn't it used like that?
But it's also just what they call humans. Like, they just, it's a slur and also just, like, what, you know, so I guess.
You mean?
Yeah, I guess the extreme comparison is just, like, if you use the N-word and only had the N-word as the way you described a certain class of people.
Are you saying that Rowling made a universe where these characters are horribly racist, but that she's so unaware that she thinks it's fine and normal?
Yeah, and I think that's what's so interesting. Like, when I talk about media, I always try to separate what I think, you know, like what characters, for instance, believe and say, and what, like, the art itself is saying. You know, like, even like my Hell of a Boss video essay, like, agree to disagree, but I did try to say, like, there's a difference between what characters are doing versus what the show itself is saying about these characters and the world that's going on. That's where you start to get into, like, is more of, like, the theme or, like, what the message, if there is any, of a piece of media is. So, like, that's the thing with Harry Potter, where it's, like, if characters are saying muggle and they're saying it as a way to show that that character is supposed to be racist, that's one thing. But if the book itself is also just kind of calling everybody with no magic a muggle and it's not, like, doing any kind of, like, analysis on that, then the story is agreeing with the racist characters, you know? And that's where it becomes, like, this is not the message of one character in Harry Potter. This is the message of Harry Potter, the story. And that's where it becomes more of an encompassing idea. And so, like, kind of going back to what I was originally talking about is that the reason wizards don't have prohibition is that apparently when prohibition happened in the human world in the 20s, a bunch of wizards thought it would also be a good idea for wizards to also have prohibition with the humans. The reason they said this was because they thought that if humans saw wizards walking around drunk, they would get suspicious.
Oh.
Okay, think about this. Think about that for a second. This is the in canon reason why people thought they should have also had prohibitions. So imagine that. Wizards thought that if a human saw a wizard, like, drunk, they would immediately think in their brain, oh, that must be a magic man. Why else could they possibly be drunk during Prohibition? Like, not think about, like, people got drunk during Prohibition. Like, that's why there were fucking speakeasies. And there was the mafia and all these, like, you saw drunk people in Prohibition. Like, what are you talking? That really is, like, such a British thing for J.K. Rowling to do. Just, like, I have no understanding of America, and I will never have understanding of America. I choose not to. I'm just going to say this, because who is going to double-check me? I am God. You know, like, it's such a stupid thing to think. It just makes no sense. And by connection, it makes the wizards sound like morons. Because if this is what the wizards thought, then they have to be stupid, right? You have to think that they just don't have, they're not the brightest bulbs, right? Because, right. Like, that's hilarious. That they would think, like, oh, if a human just saw anything drunk, they'd be like, well, that's clearly a wizard. Because how else could somebody be, like, I just find that so hysterical. And then, of course, that leads into the next logical question: why did they go into a speakeasy if there's no prohibition? Like, why is there even a speakeasy? And the answer to that is because it's a story set in the 20s, and J.K. Rowling wanted a speakeasy, and that was going to happen. You weren't not going to have a magic New York in the 20s and not have a magic speakeasy. That just wasn't going to happen. You had to have that scene. So she just has them go into a speakeasy, even though it's perfectly legal. Because it is perfectly legal. They didn't pass it. They didn't pass it. The wizards had a bad argument, as we say. But ultimately, wizards can drink as much as they want. But they still have to go to a speakeasy in order to drink, because that's what's cool for a 1920s story set in the magic world. So, you know, that's kind of like one of the more kind of meta points that I point out, is that, like, my line that I hate is in a place that shouldn't even exist. You know? Like, it just gets to that weird place. Like, this thing is so poorly written that they're just going to a place that it shouldn't even be there, because there is no prohibition for there to be a speakeasy or to need a speakeasy.
You know, sometimes it is cool to just have things happen and not explain it.
Exactly.
Like, I think trying to justify choices makes no sense. Like, art can just be art. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to do anything special.
No, I definitely agree. How kind of a soft, however. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is so convoluted and messy in everything that it's saying, that it can't actually exist as just, like, a thing. Because there's suspension of disbelief, which we have to have in order to make media make any kind of sense to us as human beings. There's that. And then there's just, like, stuff that within the own rules set up by the world cannot happen, that you just kind of in your head go, like, well, wait, what's going on? Like, where am I? Like, what's happening now? You know, like, that's it for me. It makes, like, something like Fantastic Beasts, like, really hard to hold on to, because it's like, when am I supposed to know when a character is being, like, smart or making a bad decision, when, like, every decision is just kind of, like, a nothing decision? Also, there's like 8 plots going on at the same time in Fantastic Beasts, which I mentioned a little bit in the video essay. There's so much going on and none of it's important. Like, you can talk, you can cut out like the entirety of the Fantastic Beasts in Fantastic Beasts and still have a coherent movie. That's how just separate and awful these multiple plots in the film are.
Now you're making me really interested about your full breakdown of this movie.
watch the movie too and kind of think about the stuff I'm saying, because I think a lot of people are probably like, ah, yeah, it was whatever. Like, and I'm kind of, and that's how I thought when I first saw it. Like, yeah, that was, seemed very bloated. That was the first thing I thought. It seems like there's too much going on in this movie. That was my first criticism I had. And then I started to build this up and up the more I saw it. But when you actually, like, look into what's happening, like, think, not even like a CinemaSins, like, oh, they forgot, like, you know, bullshit like that, but just, like, asking basic questions, you know, like, Tina Goldstein, gets here's a great example. Tina Goldstein takes Newt Scamander in to be, you know, arrested or whatever at the beginning of the movie because he's suspicious as fuck and he's like doing magic stuff when he's not supposed to be doing magic stuff. And like, she takes him directly to the president of the magical United States. Hmm. Like, no body check. No, like, you know, no suit. Like, she doesn't even check his suitcase because in a later scene, she's surprised to find out that his suitcase was actually switched with another guy's suitcase and there's nothing in there, monster otherwise. But, like, it's just totally normal for her to just go to the president with a strange man who she knows nothing about and just be like, hey, I found this guy, president of the United States. Like, what kind of law system is that? Like, how incompetent is the judicial system in Magic World where you can just do that? You know, and they... Yeah, this is where it kind of goes into like the larger points, because what I'm describing is basically like a bunch of small cuts to my brain that add up and add up and add up. So once I get to the 1,000th cut, you understand like why all of this is so fascinating to me. Like why nothing works. It's not like this one little thing happens and it's like, oh, who cares? You know, everybody screws up when they write a movie. It's so constant, and it's so it litters the whole film to the point where I argue it kind of becomes a theme and a motif of the movie that says a larger point about the film itself. So it's kind of, I guess it's kind of like using like a internet angry reviewer style rant in order to like explain why that is important to understanding. It's, I guess it's like a, it definitely is kind of like a joke on like those, like what were they thinking? Like angry review kind of things, but it's also being like, well, here's the first part is the angry review. And the second part of the video essay is just like, why did I do that? I guess it's like, why did I front load this with this weird shit? And I'm like, well, here's why. I think that there is a larger message to what I just did, and this is why I think it's important. And that's the video. I think it's going to come out really well. I'm really excited about this.
That is incredibly exciting. Are you still writing it, or?
It's almost done. I'm just kind of double checking some things.
Nice.
But, you know, it's definitely clocking in longer than my Hell of a Boss video essay. That one was almost an hour, so this one will definitely be over an hour. But it's, yeah, I originally started this as like a simple video, and it just kind of got more and more complicated the more I thought about it.
That happens.
It was really just going to be me, like, just like making fun of Fantastic Beasts for a little bit and calling it a, I wanted a simple one because I just did a bunch of like long, kind of complicated ones. Like, okay, I'll do an easy one, then I'll do a hard one next time. This, and then just like everything I write, the more I think about it, the more I get into like the heart of what's going on, which is why my videos sometimes tend to take a little bit longer than I'd like them to. But this one's going to be out this month. There's no reason why it wouldn't. So I'm awesome. Very excited about that.
That is exciting. I can't wait. And when it comes out, I will share it around because you deserve the views.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's have it beat my Hell of a Boss video because I don't want that to be my most popular video. I don't want to be known as the Hell of a Boss girl for the rest of my life. Especially because I kind of like it now. Some of the newer ones have been pretty good.
That's good.
But anyway.
Well, I can't wait for us all to see your video. It'll be shared. It'll be talked about, and we're definitely going to have you on the show more.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Which is exciting. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's always exciting. And with that being said, do you want to plug where people can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Madeline May, the YouTube page. You can find me on Twitter, at Friendly Cat Wife. And I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I'll see you all next time.
All right, and I will see you all next time. Crystal Williams, you can follow me on Twitter, Crystal W. Rocks. And, yeah, you know the drill. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Galaxy Geekdom Podcast. Happy 2024, and we will see you in the next one. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Okay.